Hello and welcome to Travels Through a Kingdom. It's Kaya Flynn with you until 7 this evening, and I do hope I find you well on this bank holiday Sunday. How did you enjoy the good weather? Did you have a barbecue, or did you head to the seaside, or did you stay in from the sun altogether? I'd love to hear from you and what you got up to. I'd imagine very many trips to the beach. Most of the beaches were absolutely full, and I'd imagine it was very hard to get parking spaces. But on the plus side of things, the tide times were quite early this week at 3 p.m. most of the time, around that time, so there was plenty of time to go to the beach after work as well, and plenty of walks and whatnot. And if you got sunburnt as well, I for once haven't yet, unless I can't feed it properly. Who knows though, I might have it soon. The worst is when you get it on your face, but I have my little Kerry GA bucket hat out in full force all week this week, so I won't be getting too much sunburn, I hope. And it's leading into this week as well, so do let me know what you got up to. I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me on the usual lines, on our text and WhatsApp on 083 300 3300, or if you'd rather send an email, you can do that by emailing myself, kflynn@radiokerry.ie. I'd love to hear from you on this sunny bank holiday Sunday. Now, for tonight's programme, we are all outdoors for it, because why not? We will be hearing from Jess Burkett, Killarney Park Ranger, to talk all things bats. And I know that sounds fairly random here on Travels Through a Kingdom, but I think bats are very interesting. And we've done quite a few pieces about birds and the crows and whatnot. And I thought, I think the bat might be interesting. And you kind of associate them with October, but no, they're here all year round. So we'll be hearing from Jess about those very soon. We'll have some very lovely archive of Sean Hardy's Kerry White, and if you're good as well, we'll have some music too. But to start the show tonight, we are meeting a proud Beaufort woman, and her name is Hazel Joy. Recently online, I saw people were having nettle soup, and I couldn't even imagine touching one, not to mind eating a nettle soup. But they're supposed to be very beneficial for you. So I put it out there online asking, has anyone ever tried it before, had it at any point, and what does it taste like? And Hazel got in touch with me. Hazel's mother used to forage nettle soup and put it into meals and whatnot. And Hazel caught up with me during the week to talk all things about nettle soup. But first, we talk all things growing up in her home.
My name is Hazel Joy, and I'm from Beaufort.
Okay, Hazel, you grew up in Beaufort, so tell me what it was like.
It was lovely, and it still is lovely 40-something years later. Just the scenery, as everyone knows, driving through the village is beautiful. You know, every morning I woke up, I looked at the mountains, and I still, when I pull the curtains every morning, I'm still looking at the mountains. I didn't go far, despite sort of going around the world and seeing all the lovely places out there. There's no place like home, really, and there's no place like Beaufort.
And so, this took your heart, bringing you back home as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I was reading recently in an academic journal about this theory, place attachment theory, that you get attracted to a place for some particular reason. And I think that probably explains it for me as well. But it is a beautiful place, and I suppose I'm part of a community as well there. And when you belong in a place, I think you like it. It's you, really.
Mm-hmm. And was it very busy, you know, growing up there? Like, I imagine now, I was there over the weekend myself, and it's a very popular place for tourists now. Was it like that many years ago?
It would have been. And very interestingly, there's a crossroad, 4-0 crossroad near where we live, and the sign for Killarney got regularly blown down our road by the wind, and we would have a lot of German tourists in these fabulous Mercedes and BMW cars coming down our road in thinking it was Killarney. So that was nice. My love of nice German cars probably began in my childhood. And so, yeah, it would have been busy from that respect. You know, you would have had tourists going off the beaten track. You would have had people as well being adventurous, climbing the mountains. But obviously we have much more now in climbing Carn Tuil. I mean, there's groups going up every day, several times a day. So it's much busier from that point of view, from the outdoor adventure point of view. But in terms of growing up, it was quiet, and it still is quiet. But, you know, we had a lot. We'd a lot going. You know, I was involved in sports, the community games, and so were my brothers and sisters as well. So that kept us going as well.
Mm-hmm. And you've a beautiful mountain, which is very easy to climb as well, as Strachan Mountain. Would you have gone up that much?
I have. Yeah, I've gone up Strachan, and it's lovely because you get great views of the parish. end of Killarg and end of Fossa as well, so you can kind of see right in to the lake in Fossa.
Mm-hmm. And you went to school then in Killarg, was that for primary or secondary?
That was secondary school, yeah. So I went to the intermediate school in Killarg and got to know pretty much a lot of people in Mid-Kerry because of all the Mid-Kerry parishes at that time would have gone to Killarg. And it was... The school had just had a new building as well. I think it opened up a year or two before I went. So it had all top of the range facilities and everyone wanted to be in the nice, bright, shiny new building, I guess, you know. Mm. And you just follow your friends as well. Wherever they're going, you'll just go.
And I bet you can tell some funny stories from going to school and whatnot.
Better not. I might slander some people.
Now, Hazel, one of the reasons why we got in contact was because I was wondering about the whole thing of nettle soup. Now, I remember one time I picked up a nettle with the end of my shirt and I tickled someone's leg with the nettle. Obviously, very bold. I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't recommend.
Yeah.
How on earth do people actually eat or drink nettle soup? Like, where did that even come from?
Well, I suppose back in olden times, people looked to the hedgerow for their medicines. And nettles, now they didn't know then, but they've done scientific research now, that nettles are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. And I actually was just researching this, and the European Medicines Agency has said that it's useful for the treatment of rheumatic disorders and arthritis, and for the usage as diuretic against inflammatory symptoms. So that's straight out of the Journal of Food Chemistry, in case anybody thinks I've just made it up or got it from the abyss of the internet. So they would have, they always reached to the natural remedies before going to the doctor, obviously. So nettles, when I was younger, my mother used to make nettle soup. So at the time, we were just told it's good for you. We weren't told anything about it.
And you had to eat it.
Exactly, because mothers know best and you don't argue. So what we had to do was go out and pick the nettles, forage them for my mother. So what we were given was a bucket and a pair of welding gloves, because I asked her what kind of gloves we were given. So they were welding gloves, my father's welding gloves. And we went out and we either could pick them up by hand, or sometimes we'd have to cut the stalks with the scissors and pick them when they were as young and fresh as possible, because they do go off quite quickly. Now, I was, before this interview, I was just looking at the hedgerows, at the nettles, and they are kind of wilting a little bit now. I know we've had very hot weather recently, but around the first half of May, it seems, is the best time for the nettles to harvest them. And if they're about 1 foot in height, they're the best. So yeah, they're the juiciest and they have the highest concentrations of the beneficial properties in them as well.
And then how do you prepare them? I know, obviously, is it the whole thing of just throw them into a pot, a bit of water? I'd imagine it's very bland.
Well, what my mother did was she had a base of potatoes and other greens in there as well. So she used to cook the potatoes first. So throw them all into a pot, the potatoes first, then the other greens like peas and broccoli. The nettles only take a few minutes to do, really. And just putting in the stock cube and salt and pepper into it, and then throwing the nettle leaves. So she didn't put in the stalks. She got the welding gloves from us and took off the leaves and put them in to it as it was kind of coming to the end of the boil. They only take about 2 to 3 minutes to cook, and then just let it cool down a little bit, and then just put in a blender to blend the whole thing up and make it smooth.
And could you taste them at all?
Depending on the amount that you'd put in. I mean, if she put in maybe half the pot of nettles, yeah, you could. And it was a kind of, like, if you taste nettles tea, now you can get nettle tea in the herbal shops.
That's true, actually.
It's very similar, just a kind of more soupy version of the nettle tea. It's a similar flavour.
You know, what you just described there about, you know, the peas, the spuds in the pot, it's when food was so simple, but so good for you. I mean, I think we take complete advantage of all that now.
I think we do, definitely. And I think the joy of it back then as well was foraging it. So you actually went out and got the food yourself, and that was your reward, this lovely tasty soup. But nowadays I asked her, is the recipe the same? She still cooks it actually.
Oh, wow.
And she puts in ginger, garlic and chilli into it now as an extra flavour, because those different products, they also have medicinal purposes as well. Garlic and chilli and ginger are supposed to be good for the immune system.
I was just about to say, it would be really good for your immune system.
Yeah.
And just getting those into you, because I'll be very honest with you, I can't remember the last time I had any of those types of herbs, or I can't even remember the last time I had a bit of ginger. You know, it's just something that you just don't think about putting into your body, whereas when they're all blended up together, you're getting it all in at once.
Yeah, exactly. So as I say, the base of the recipe is the same, but those new ingredients out. So I suppose when we were younger, ginger and chilli wouldn't have been in the supermarkets at all. So I guess as time goes on, you just add little different bits
just
into it and experiment.
Yeah.
Exactly, experimenting, yeah.
And did you ever go picking blackberries?
Yes.
Oh, did you make the jam?
We did. We did, yeah. It's lovely. And I still go picking blackberries, actually, because I would put them in salads, an autumn salad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, how would you prepare them? Because you know when you kind of look at them, there's like little brown specks.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know how to explain it, but you kind of look like, I better not put it into my mouth whole while it's at the thing. But would you, if you were picking one off, would you eat one off the bush?
I would.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm still alive to tell the tale. Yeah, so I suppose if you're picking a lot, you just rinse them and that's it really. And you can have them, you know, as a piece of fruit after your dinner, or as I say, put them into a salad as well, because they're lovely with cheese. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, Hazel, it just kind of goes to the whole point that, like, and I was saying this off air, obviously, that, you know, people are getting a lot more sicker nowadays, you know, because we don't really look after our health. We don't put as much goodness into our bodies, as it's just right outside our door, you know. And times were simpler then, but we were all a bit healthier in a
exactly.
way.
Well, I think there's a lot of things at play as well. I mean, there's much more stress now than there would have been back then. I mean, you know, I'd say the concept of negative equity would never have been around back then. So I said much more stress. People are commuting longer as well. They're stuck in their cars, so less exercise. So there's, and, you know, food additives as well. There's more food additives. People had more time, I think, to cook things from basics or from first principles. They brought the individual ingredients and cooked them from scratch. But whereas people probably don't have the time nowadays. So time is a huge factor, you know. And I mean, my father worked full time, but my mother was a full time stay at home mum. So she would have had the time to do all the cooking and it would have been fresh, you know. So yeah, we're just running and racing around the place.
And that's the thing, it's so easy to buy one of those microwave meals now and just throw it in the thing and hope for the best and then just eat it quickly, because you are really busy, you know, and you're tired.
Exactly.
You don't want to spend an hour or two cooking a dinner that you'll probably eat for about, what, 5 or 10 minutes?
Exactly, that's it. Well, I suppose the key is to do batch cooking. So do a big batch that you can have maybe 6 or 7 portions out of it, you know, and that'll do you maybe for the following day, and then you can freeze the rest of it. So. Yeah.
And for anyone that is going to be listening to our interview, would you suggest picking nettles now? Is it still okay, or would it have been better 2 weeks ago?
It would have been better 2 weeks ago. Now, it depends. I mean, those nettles on the side of the road are probably wilting at the moment. But if you can get access into a field, they may be better. You may have the younger nettles. It just depends, really. Mm. So if they're about a foot high, they'll be pretty good. But be careful. Wear your gloves.
And don't dangle them on anyone's legs.
No. Well, the thing about it is, dock leaves grow beside nettles, and dock leaves are the antidote to a nettle sting. So pick a dock leaf, I know, and rub it on your leg, and it'll get all juicy.
I used to do that when I was younger.
Exactly, yeah. And that'll clear the sting, take the sting out of the nettle sting, yeah.
Lovely. And it just reminds me as well of the buttercup, putting it under your chin and see if it's yellow, it shows that you like butter. But everyone had that little bit of yellow underneath.
Well, butter is nice, isn't it?
Oh,
we all
nice.
Like butter.
Hazel, thank you so much for your time and letting us know all of that information about nettle soup.
That's great. Thanks very much, Kaya.
And that was Hazel Joy speaking to me over the week. Well, what do you think? Would you try nettles in your dinner? They're very beneficial, as you heard from her there. I haven't tried it. Am I going to try it? I might. Who knows? As long as it's blended up and I can't taste it or see it, I think I would eat it. Whereas if I could see a nettle hanging around in a bit of water, I don't think I'd be able for it. But I probably would try it if it was mashed up into my spuds and my whatever. I'm very bad for eating vegetables. And if my nan is listening at home, She will tell you that I was so bad that every time she made a stew, she had to put the whole onion in, because if I saw onion bits, I wouldn't eat the soup. Spoiled brat, maybe. Or maybe she just loved me unconditionally. But what do you think? Would you eat nettle soup or forage your blackberries still to this day? I know obviously it was very popular once upon a time, but I would love to know if you still do it and why. You can text or WhatsApp us on 083 300 3300 or email kflynn@radiokerry.ie. We'll be back with more on Travels Through a Kingdom after this break. And you're very welcome back to tonight's Travels Through a Kingdom. It's Kaya Flynn with you here until 7 here on Radio Kerry. Now we are off to Killarney National Park to meet Jess Burkett, Killarney Park Ranger, to talk all things about bats.
My name is Jess Burkett. I'm a conservation ranger here in Killarney National Park, and we are here in Knockreer along the Deenock River.
Now, you being a ranger here in Killarney National Park, that's gone back in your family for generations. Tell us a bit about that, Jess.
Yeah, so my dad was actually a ranger here in Killarney National Park for well over 30 years, I think. So, kind of ended up going down the same road as him, and here I am now as a ranger myself. I guess growing up in Killarney and then having a dad as a ranger, I've always kind of been around it. So, I was really excited then to be able to take on this role myself and work in Killarney National Park.
And what got you interested in wildlife and all of that?
I guess to some extent, kind of growing up with it, it was always around. I was always kind of interested in it that way. And then I studied ecology in college for 4 years, and then I worked as an ecologist as well. So I've kind of, it's been my journey as working in wildlife. Yeah, it's been great.
Brilliant. And we're here today now, as we said, we're here in the middle of Killarney National Park, if that's maybe the right term. But we're talking bats.
Yeah.
All things bats. So we're going to go for a walk, and we're going to talk all things bats. So what's the first thing you kind of see people say when they see a bat?
Poor bats probably get a little bit of a bad time. I guess, you know, some people can be quite scared of them, but then obviously a lot of people do like them too. So it's a bit of a mixed
What
review.
Would people be scared about?
I think there's that old wives' tale of bats flying into people's hair, which
oh no,
it's not true. I've worked around bats for years and been in close proximity with bats as well.
They're tiny, aren't
they're
they?
Really small. Like a common pipistrelle weighs between 5 to 6 grams and can fit into, you know, crevices the size of your thumb. So they're really small, some of them. And we do have bigger bats as well, like the Leisler's bat would be one of the larger bats in Ireland. Mm-hmm. They can get a bit of a bad rap sometimes.
But I generally, suppose when I see them, I think of Halloween and that
exactly,
kind of thing.
Exactly,
you know, something scary.
Exactly, and people associate them with being bitten by bats and things, but we don't have any bats like that here in Ireland. They're mainly just eating insects, so nothing to be scared of.
What kind of bats do we have here in Ireland?
So we have 9 species of bats in Ireland. They range from the common pipistrelle, soprano pipistrelle, which are some of the smaller bats. Then we have Daubentons. We have the lesser horseshoe, which is a really important bat here in Ireland and is really important here in Kerry as well.
Why so?
The lesser horseshoe bat is quite rare. Its numbers are quite low. So Kerry and kind of the west of Ireland is one of the main places that it's found, mainly because we have such mild winters here. We have them roosting, and it's all about protecting their roosts. They're a protected species as well, so it's
fantastic.
Really important that we look after their habitat and where they like to roost.
Mm-hmm. And there was a few other species?
Yeah, so there's also the whiskered bat, the brown long-eared bat, I've probably forgotten how many I've said now. Well, there's 9 species in total.
So from what, like, there's obviously different characteristics and things with them, but like as an ordinary person, me seeing a bat would just see a bat and not think much of it. But what do you see when you look at bats?
So a similar thing. So when they're flying around, it's quite hard to tell what kind of bat it is. But when you're out looking at bats, we usually bring bat detectors with us.
Okay.
So that's mainly
like Batman.
So we have bat detectors, and that's how we basically are able to identify them. So bats use what's called echolocation. They make a series of high frequency noises. Mm-hmm. They bounce off different objects in the landscape, and then the bat waits for the echo to come back to them, and that tells them the size of the object and also where it's going and its direction.
Oh, wow.
So it's really impressive. So it's called echolocation. And so when they make those series of high frequency pitch noises, this is picked up then on the bat detector.
So we wouldn't hear it, would we?
No. I mean, some of it is audible. Some of the species you can hear with your ears. Younger people probably could hear them.
Yes.
But in general, no. You would need a bat detector to tell.
Okay.
Which species it is, yeah.
And that's obviously certain bats, and then would other ones be kind of more quiet-like and maybe sneaky? Is that the right term?
They would all use echolocation.
Okay.
So they all use it in their own way, but yeah, the same kind of thing. It's basically to get around at night. I mean, the other kind of thing is people say, you know, you're as blind as a bat.
I'm literally just about to
say. Yeah, that's not true. Bats have really good eyesight. Mm-hmm.
Especially at nighttime, I assume.
So at nighttime, they kind of switch. They would then, that's when they rely on their ears. So that's why the echolocation then is so important.
So where do they go during the day then? Because they're obviously something that we notice at night.
Exactly. So bats like to roost in various places, depending again kind of on species, but generally we can kind of say they roost in trees, like crevices and cracks in any trees that you have. They also like old buildings. Mm-hmm. They also like canals, bridges. There's a whole range of kind of habitats that they'll be in. And they generally tend to hang out there during the day, mm-hmm. Wait for it to get dark. They tend to kind of come out around dusk. Sometimes a bit later, sometimes a bit earlier. It's just mm-hmm. depending on how hungry they are.
Yeah.
And they're generally flying around then until dawn.
And why is it that they wait until like dusk and dark to actually go out? Is it because of predators?
Exactly, predation. Yeah, they're just making sure that they're safe and it's a good time to come out. And a lot of their prey species will be out flying around as well, so they'll be able to feed.
Okay. And who would they be kind of nervous of?
A whole kind of range of things. Cats can be something that like to predate on bats. Pine martens, anything that can kind of get to them, really. You'd be surprised, I guess, that something could kind of spot a bat, but if they get low enough, they
don't
might
worry,
be able
I've
to.
Seen my cats do things, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. That's unfortunately that they are one to kind of worry about, but generally they will wait till dusk and then they're safe enough to come out then.
So where we are at the moment, if you were going spotting bats, where around here would you see them?
So bats kind of like to fly along linear features. So the Deanock River is kind of perfect in that sense because it's a nice straight feature to a point. So tree lines as well, they'll be foraging all along this. So basically if you're walking along the Deanock River and you look along the river, you'll see them flying over it and flying along the tops of trees as well. So they'll be foraging all the little insects.
I suppose as well when midgee season kind of comes out,
that's
their heaven.
Exactly. And, you know, bats will eat up to 3,000 insects a night each.
Oh,
so that's why they're so important. We'd be overrun with insects without them. So they're a really important species to have. And obviously the more bats you have, the better the habitat. It really shows that there's a good habitat here for them that they're using. And then obviously the more insects you have, the better for them.
And I assume as well, you know, in Killarney and I suppose around Kerry as well, they have, you know, good habitats here.
They do, yeah.
They're surviving.
Exactly. Killarney National Park would be a great habitat. It's so diverse in its habitats. You have streams, you have rivers, you have woodland, you have lakes, and then all different species of bats will use different habitats, but they'll generally use all of them.
And why do they sleep upside down?
So it's actually the lesser horseshoe bat that sleeps upside down.
Oh!
Some of the other species of bats, like common pipistrelles, soprano pipistrelle, they like to fly into a roost and they'll actually crawl to where they're going, and they generally kind of like to sit, whereas the lesser horseshoe bat, will fly. It has to fly in because it can't crawl.
Yeah.
It's one of the only kind of species that does that. And then exactly turns upside down and hangs upside down. It's just the way that they hang. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love that term, roost.
Yeah.
It's really cute.
Yeah, a bat roost, exactly. So that's kind of the general term for where they would be living.
Perfect. And I was just going to think of something there. Yeah, I suppose when some people see bats, they think they kind of look like mice in a way.
Yeah.
Would they be kind of similar, other than that they can fly?
Yeah, so weirdly enough, bats are more closely related to humans than they are to mice.
Oh, how so?
Which is kind of crazy, yeah. I'm not 100% sure. It's something I read recently and I thought, wow, you know, a lot of people would be really surprised to hear that. But their wings are basically hands that have been modified to fly. And bats are actually almost better at flying than birds, just because they're so...
Is that because as well, like, their wings are kind of like, they're like a holly leaf, if that makes sense?
Yeah, yeah, they're, like, another name for them in Irish is leather wing. Cool. Yeah, which is kind of funny, because I guess that's, I mean, their wings can kind of look like that, I guess. But, yeah, they're really, really well adapted to fly. That's why they're so good at getting around trees. You know, when they're in a cluttered habitat, you know, if they're in a dense woodland or something like that, mm-hmm. they're able to echolocate so well and so quickly to find their way through, even if there are a lot of trees or obstacles around. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they're really good at that.
And which season do they prefer?
So bats are generally kind of active between, we would say, kind of from now, from April, May, all the way up until September, October. It kind of depends on how mild or cold a winter we're going to have. Mm. But at the moment, they're out, they're hungry, they're active. In the next couple of months, they'll be looking to find somewhere to have their babies.
I was just going to ask, when is breeding season
for
them?
Yes, so another kind of interesting fact about bats is they breed in the autumn. The female then will hold on to the sperm until the following spring, and then she becomes pregnant in the spring.
Wow.
Which is kind of, yeah, which is cool.
Very unique.
Yeah, exactly. So then they kind of look for a maternity roost. So they have these big roosts where the females will all go together and they'll have their babies in these big kind of, they usually do it in old kind of buildings. They'll find somewhere nice and warm.
It's like UHK ward in the maternity.
Yeah. That's it. And they all have their babies together. The males generally don't tend to be in those roosts. They generally go off by themselves. You might get the odd male sometimes, but generally it's all females. They'll have their babies in June. They're basically looking after them then in July. They feed them with their milk. By kind of 6 weeks, the baby bats then, or they're called pups, are ready to go by by August. They're able to fly and they're able to eat insects themselves.
Oh, wow.
And then in August, everybody leaves the maternity roost and then they're off to look to mate again and get ready for the next.
And how many would they have?
Just one. Okay. Just one pup. Generally, like every year, maybe every 2 years, but they would only have one baby.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
And then how old would they kind of normally be before they start having children?
I think they can do that quite soon, actually. I'm not 100% sure on what age they generally would be, but yeah, they
interesting.
Yeah.
And something else I was going to ask there and then it came on my head. Yeah, what's the lifespan of a bat?
So bats generally in the wild would probably live till they're about 4 or 5 years of age.
That's
there
good.
Have been some reports of bats living over 20 years, kind of, yeah, generally most bats would survive maybe 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many fun facts I didn't know about
bats. Yeah.
Just thank you. Yeah. If anyone wanted to find out any more information about bats, or if maybe some people see them around their house and things like that, where can they send information
to? So bats in houses and things like that do come up. We would recommend calling someone in the National Parks and Wildlife Service, so you can call us in Killarney National Park, and we can direct you into the right area. It might be another ranger, it might be one of us here in Killarney National Park, and we'll be able to advise you.
Perfect. Well, Jess, thank you for your time and for all the information on bats.
Thank you very much.
And that was Jess Burkett speaking with me on a beautiful day in Killarney National Park. And I was very fascinated by the bats and how they're almost always associated with October, as I said, but they're here all year round. And I love that phrase, you know, you're as blind as a bat. Bats have the most supersonic eyes and being able to see things at night as well. So it's pretty ironic that we do say that. Usually it was always referred to me when I couldn't find something that was staring me right in the face, like, where's the butter in the fridge? And my nan would come find it, she'd see it, and then she's like, you're as blind as a bat. But let me know what you think. If you think about it as well, actually, another way I look at bats is they're like flying mice. It's like mice with wings. I think it's kind of cute anyway. But let me know what you think. If you have any interesting facts about bats or anything like that, you can get in touch tonight on text or WhatsApp on 083 300 3300 or email caitlin@radiokerry.ie. Now we'll be back with more on Travels Through a Kingdom after this break. And you're very welcome back to tonight's Travels Through a Kingdom on this June Bank Holiday Sunday. I hope you're enjoying it and making the most of it. And this weekend is a big weekend for my Aunt Joan and her husband Trevor. 7 years of happy, lovely marriage. So happy anniversary to both of you. It's been 7 years now that I think about it since I've last been to a wedding. So my friends would want to get on the boat fairly soon so we can start going to more weddings. I know there's a few people here at work that have a wedding nearly every second weekend. So when the time comes, I'm sure I'll enjoy it too. Now it's time to revisit the archive of Sean Hurley's Kerrywide here on Travels Through a Kingdom.
Now we're looking for a female singer, and we have one, I believe, here, Jerry.
Yeah, Evelyn Cronin.
Evelyn Cronin. Evelyn is here alongside us. How are you, Evelyn? It's been a long time.
Long time, yes, indeed.
Long time. I met you back in the 80s, didn't I?
That's right.
Above in that little house in Shrone.
That's right.
And they had a lovely rambling house going then. Of course, that's now long gone.
A pity it's gone, yeah. It was great while it lasted.
It was a great house. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're leaving the past behind and we're going to come to the future and the present, of course. You want to sing for us?
I've met some folks who say that I'm a dreamer. And I've no doubt there's truth in what they say. I'm sure a body's bound to be a dreamer in all the things he loved are far away. And precious things are dreamed into an exile. They take them o'er that land across the sea. Especially when it happens he's an exile from that dear lovely isle. I'll finish free. I wander o'er green hills and dreamy valleys to find a peace no other land could know. I hear the birds make music fit for rangers and watch the rivers laughing as they flow. But then into a humble shack I wander. The dear ones there it tenderly behold. The folks I love around tar fire gather on bended knees the rosary is told. But dreams don't last though dreams are not forgotten, and soon I'm back to stern reality. Although they paint the footpaths here with gold dust, I still would choose my eye of finish free. Although they paint the footpaths here with gold dust, I still would choose my eye of finish free.
Evelyn, you sang that beautifully. And are these your children here with you, your relations? Yeah?
This is my daughter. She's working in Dublin. And this is my daughter, yes. Madeline Rutmore. And this is my grandchild.
Oh, my heavens above. The years are flying.
Oh, yes, indeed. I'm one out of 15, so I have a lot of... I haven't too many grandchildren yet, but I have a lot. I have six in family myself.
And you know what? You're singing better than when you were single.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're maturing. I hope you didn't take up that the wrong way now, because you were also a beautiful singer when you were single, you see. But whatever the marriage bit did to you, stronger you're getting.
I don't know all about that now, Shonda.
I'm telling you now, keep it up anyway. It's fantastic.
Thank you, Shonda.
Thank you very much.
I felt in me that northern sky prevent an added sign. They have gone to join that gallant Duncan Pearson Tone, another martyr for old Ireland, comes out from Gardeon. Another martyr for old Ireland, comes out from Gardeon.
Good man, how are you?
You're well. Good.
Johnny, you know what? We had an orchestra behind you there.
You know that, yeah.
Wasn't it fantastic?
That made me feel good.
Yeah, I tell you what, no. Not a bad group at all, there's no doubt about that. Was Patsy Hurley down there playing the banjo, I wonder?
He was.
I heard the banjo somewhere there.
And that was the archive of Sean Hurley here on Travels Through a Kingdom this Sunday evening. I want to say a big thank you to Hazel Joy and Jess Burkett for joining me on this week's show. And remember to send me on your nettle recipes by emailing kflynn@radiokerry.ie and what you like most about foraging them. I'd be very interested to see what way you have your nettles. Make sure to check out radiokerry.ie, Spotify and Apple iTunes for the Travels Through a Kingdom podcast, and make sure to share it with a friend too. The more the merrier, as they say. Stay with us here on Radio Kerry as Brendan is on the way with 7 days, and then Sean Riley is on from 8 to late with Irish favourites for you on this bank holiday Sunday. So from me, Kaya Flynn, until next Sunday, I'll talk to you then. Bye bye.